The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
150 years, the Kentucky Derby's been an icon of racing and luxury. The first Saturday in May, the world turns its attention here.
They're off in the Kentucky Derby. And they're into the stretch. Oh, my goodness.
This is the place to be.
The 150th Kentucky Derby, Saturday, May 4th, on NBC and Peacock.
When Will Levis was here with us, he told us his hidden talent is singing. What is LJS's?
Singing.
You can
really?
Sing as well?
Yes.
You're
not gonna,
make you.
You're not going to demonstrate for us, are you?
I got a song I can demonstrate for y'all.
Okay, go ahead.
In my life, I can't get right. Trying to figure out what to do. Running the streets all day and night. Acting like a fool.
That wasn't bad. I mean, you know, that's a bold check to make. When somebody asks you what your hidden talent is and you say it's singing, first of all, if you're not going to sing, it really is a hidden talent.
Right.
And second of all, when you let the pipes go, you better back it up. You can't just start squeaking and squealing and being off key. So that was pretty good. I mean, I don't know that he'd make it to Hollywood on American Idol, but that was pretty good.
It was pretty good.
Or get the chair turned around on
the cuff,
Voice.
Just like
I guess
that.
As you mentioned, the NBC show. The chair turns around on The Voice, they tell me.
Oh, that's right. That's right. I forgot. That's our show. Yes. I mean, listen, I give them an A for having guts to do that, for sure. Not bad for not warming The Voice up. And, you know, he's feeling good. You know, he got that payday. He's getting all that cash, right? He's wearing that suit. He figured out I'll belt out a few tunes there, right? I mean, he looked like he was ready to lead a concert anyways in that suit there. But good for L'Jarius Sneed. Always like to see guys get paid. He's one of the best corners in football. So good for him getting it done.
His not hidden talent, his ability to take guys at the line of scrimmage and put them on the ground like he did with Tyreek Hill in that wild card game that they played in Kansas City. But Sneed goes from the Chiefs to the Titans. It was clear before they even applied the franchise tag, they were willing to trade him. At the end of the day, and it all comes down to how much free agency activity the Chiefs engage in this year, they really didn't get that much for him, but they clearly wanted to get something for him. They got something, but not a great amount.
Yeah.
And, you know, people are saying, oh, he's the highest paid cornerback in the league. I want to see the full details on the deal. That's one that kind of fell through the cracks because it's been a story that kind of unfolded over a week and a half. And it's like, let's see. I know the cornerback market hasn't gone up maybe the way it should, but let's really see what that deal is for L'Jarius Sneed. He talked yesterday about becoming the highest paid corner in the league and also concerns about his knee or knees,
right,
case may be. Here's what he had to say.
Oh, man, ain't nothing wrong with my knee. I'm fine. You know, I played the whole season. And the years before that, I played as well. You know, I had a couple of problems. You know, I had banged up knee before. But I'm good right now. Nothing is really wrong with my knee.
So it's not a situation that you have to manage going forward?
No, I know what to do with my knee. You know, I'm coming out here to play ball.
I mean, I just feel like I deserve to be, you know, to be the highest paid off of my season that I had last year. And, you know, that's why I want to shoot that number up that high. And I feel that I deserved it. But, you know, things worked out for me and for my family and, you know, for the organization or the Tennessee Titans.
That is one hell of a jacket.
Yeah, yes, it is.
I didn't appreciate it the last time around. That is a hell of a – that is something – like, see, I wonder when you wear something that flashy and that unique, can you ever wear it twice? Like, is that the jacket that you wear all the time? It
no,
can't be just like I wear
can't.
It once
it's
a week. It's in my
special,
rotation.
Right, special.
That has to be.
Right.
It might only be, I think, like for like, you know, the can't hide money crowd.
Yeah.
I really do think, and this is stressful to me, the idea that I have clothes that I only have ever worn once because I can't wear it again because people don't expect me to wear the same thing twice, and it's so memorable. You know, like a lot of times, and I'm sure you've been through this, your wife will say, you know, do you remember when I wore this? Did I wear this here? Did I wear this? Like, well, if you don't remember it, nobody else is going to remember it. You know,
right.
Like, I mean,
right.
So go ahead and wear it again.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not like it's something that is so dramatically unique that people are going to be like, oh, yeah, she is wearing that thing again. She wore it last week. She's wearing it again. So anyway, I don't know that we're going to see L'Jarius Sneed wearing that thing at many Titans post-game press conferences.
No, I don't think it's a random once in a while, right? I go to a big, you know, red carpet event maybe a year from now, and then he might bust it out again. But I don't know.
Get a new one.
He might. You're right.
Where do those clothes end up? Those people that only wear it one time. Where do those clothes end up?
Hopefully
do they go to Goodwill?
They donate them or give them to a family member that can maybe fit into them, something like that. I know that's kind of how it's gone in, you know, in my life with excess gear and stuff at times, right? My father, the same thing. You know, he'd got all his brothers. They'd be living down in Kentucky. He'd send things down there and hey, I don't wear this anymore. I don't wear that anymore. I never wore this. Here's a, you know, so I would guess that's where it goes. Something like that.
Far more importantly, he says there's nothing wrong with his knee. But if you listen carefully, there's something with the knee. The fact that he played in every game doesn't mean he's 100%. Tom Brady played all of 2020 with a fully torn MCL in his knee. So there may be some maintenance. There may be some concern. It may be something where it has to be managed. Regardless, he played at a high level. But from the standpoint of the Chiefs getting some massive trade offer and Sneed getting maybe more than he got, I'm in the process of getting the full details on the deal so we can see what it really is.
Looks like it's a Jalen Johnson-ish type of contract, right? Maybe not where it's a little bit more front-loaded like you talk about all the time to where maybe he can get back at the table, right? The number that jumps out to me is the $55 million in guaranteed money. And again, I know we don't know that specifically yet, but you know that's the kind of thing where you go, well, in the first 2 years, that means he's going to make 22.5. He's worthy of being in that conversation, as we know. He's that island type of corner. He's one of the few people in football where you're willing to gamble a little bit, you know, a handful of times every game and go, he can cover Tyreek Hill by himself, right? We don't need to double him or anything. That's pretty special, right? So I wasn't shocked to see, you know, this type of contract with L'Jarius Sneed. He is phenomenal. I mean, again, he didn't let up a touchdown, plays all that man-to-man, didn't let up a touchdown pass against the whole year until what, the Buffalo game when Josh Allen made an incredible play, scrambling to the left. So we're talking about one of the elite corners in football and a complete football player. Does everything. Tackles, as you could see, creates plays like that, and then, of course, can cover people. I was a little surprised, too, Mike, like you, that maybe there wasn't a little bit better of a deal as far as for the Chiefs to get the trade done, right? But, yeah, they were content on getting something. I think the writing was on the wall there that, you know, they didn't really want him on the team and have to pay him. They couldn't have managed to do that. The contract itself and him wanting to be paid takes down the value of the trade. They got young guys coming up like we talked about in the past who I think they believe in. So that probably hurt it. But L'Jarius Sneed, no doubt, one of the best corners in football.
$44 million guaranteed at signing with another 11 injury guarantee.
Right.
So that's that $55 million. And this idea that he's the highest paid corner in football, I'm looking at the deal right now.
It's weird.
Corners, the average value on this contract.
Right.
Now, listen, it's 19-1.
Yeah.
The notion that he's the highest paid player at his position in the NFL right now is, to quote Chris Sims, bullshit, bullshit, bullshit.
Exactly.
It's just not.
I didn't understand 21 that. Right.
Is the record.
Jair Alexander, 19-1 right?
Is not. He's seventh. He's seventh on the list of average value. Jair Alexander's top at 21.
Yeah, yeah. I'm looking at, you know, the list here. He's sixth because he's got Jalen Johnson beat by 100,000. But yeah, I was kind of surprised to hear that too. Like, that was one of those when he was highest paid corner. I looked at the deal and I was like, wait, That's not the highest paid. I've looked at these things before. There's people making, you know, a better average salary here. So I don't know how that works or works out. And that, again, that's where I was a little surprised, like Jalen Johnson and Lajarius Sneed. I thought they might get a little bit more than that. I'm not going to lie there. Again, they are in the class of Denzel Ward and Jai Alexander. They definitely are, right? I would right now, you know, Marshawn Lattimore's in front of them. I'd go, they're better than Marshawn Lattimore right now. Right? Marlon Humphrey, who's, you know, been in the league for a long time. Yeah, I would take, you know, those two guys over a lot of those guys we just talked about there. I was honestly surprised they didn't get a little bit more.
Now, you're right. It is front-loaded. It pays out. And cash flow is the key. First-year cash flow, 25. Next year, 19. He gets the first $44 million the first 2 years. And then it's 16 and 16 four.
So,
you go back to the table, or they say, hey, you signed a four-year deal. You're in the lower-end years of your contract. That's just the way it goes. Sometimes players get it. Sometimes they're just like, I want a new contract. I'm only making $16 million. It's like, well, no, you made 19-1. It just got front-loaded. When you get to year three and four, it's harder to get the players sometimes to accept that, and that's just human nature. Okay, so that's Lajarius Sneed's situation. Now a member of the Titans, traded from the Kansas City Chiefs. The Vikings did reportedly back off on Sneed due to concerns about that knee, and I had heard chatter along those lines, and I hate
that. We heard, you know, chatter, right.
And it's one of those things where it is or it isn't. Like, we're hearing those concerns about the knee. It's not like you sign the guy without doing an examination of his body and review of any relevant data that's out there that would show whether or not there should be a concern. It isn't some vague rumor that can't be debunked. Any rumor about his health can be debunked by competent medical professionals, and the Titans are comfortable with Lajarius Sneed. And this is one of those situations where some teams might be and some teams might not be. The Dolphins weren't comfortable with Drew Brees. For crying out loud. The doctor that Nick Saban blames, what did he say? The doctor who didn't know his ass from a bag of sand? I think that's what he said.
Yeah,
blaming it on him instead of blaming it on himself because he had full control over the team. He could have said, I don't care. We're taking this guy. I want this guy. All right, the Chiefs took Clyde Edwards-Helaire in the first round of the draft in 2020. He became a free agent. He agreed to terms on a one-year deal. J.K. Dobbins was in for a visit yesterday, and, you know, the first thought is, well, he must not like J.K. Dobbins. The second thought is maybe bringing in J.K. Dobbins got Clyde Edwards-Helaire to take the offer that was on the table before it was gone, and they signed J.K. Dobbins.
I think there's, you know, I would expect that. That would be the dots I connect, right? Man, we're not making the progress we thought with Clyde Edwards-Helaire. Man, we got to look for another option here. Let's bring him into town. Right, J.K. Dobbins is obviously got big time talent. We know that, but he's a huge risk right now to sign. It's two major leg injuries, right? 2 years in a row. We're talking what, Achilles and ACL back to back. So, you know, Clyde Edwards-Helaire has been there, first round pick. It hasn't been great. We know that, but knows the offense, gives them depth, and contributes a few snaps every game. And I would expect that's what the contract kind of says. I don't think it's going to be anything special. It's probably close to the minimum, honestly, or maybe just a little bit more with incentives. That's what I would expect.
We both had the Chiefs taking him at number 32 the year after they won the Super Bowl. And I remember talking to Brett Veach afterward. He was on PFTPM, and it was kind of like, you guys are onto something here. They know, what do they know? And they took him at number 32. And, you know, at first he was great, and there was a lot of promise and a lot of hype, and it just didn't pan out. I mean, it's ultimate sink or swim at the NFL. You either go out there and make an impact each and every week and it strings together and you become regarded as a key player, or it just doesn't.
Yeah.
And for whatever reason, right, with Edwards-Helaire, it just didn't work out over the long haul of his 4 years with the Chiefs.
But it
worked out enough that they're willing to bring him back for a fifth.
Yeah, that's it. Bring him back, right? He contributes. They like him. He's a Chiefs guy. You know, I think they like the person and everything he brings as far as adding to their culture. You know, he is good on third downs. He's got more power than people think. That's the one thing that's always amazing about him. The damn little guy's got some strong legs, like we see right there, to break a lot of arm tackles. That's where he's damn good. So they needed him. But, yes, Mike, that's why, hey, the draft is hard, And that's where, you know, you see the difference between college football and the NFL. Clyde Edwards-Helaire he's quick as hell. We know that. He's got good strength for his size. The question coming out was, ooh, his straight speed, right? He's got a little bit of what I always call like the Peter Warwick syndrome. Remember Peter Warwick at Florida State back in the day?
Yes.
Awesome player, breaking ankles, do all that. But there wasn't enough speed, so he'd break somebody's ankles, break somebody else's ankles. And then that first guy that he broke the ankles of already came back and tackled him as he started to break away. And I think there's a little bit of that with Clyde Edwards-Helaire, with the NFL game being a little faster, guys not being at his position the same way. Right, and I believe he ran like a 4.6 flat or a 4.59, something like that. It wasn't like an eye-popping time. It showed up in the NFL, and you know, that's one that the draft community, myself, whatever, you know, I think all kind of misevaluated to a degree.
Well, and that's the challenge, the projection as to what the guy is going to be at the highest level of the sport, because he's never faced that concentration of highly talented players who can make the quick recovery and catch up to him
right after
he thinks he's broken free,
right before
he can turn on the Jets, or when he does turn on the Jets and they sputter, the guy who truly has rockets up his ass, tracks him down, and tackles him. And that's the difficult – when you're watching college film,
yeah, the
hardest part, I would assume, Chris, you study this more than I do, but the hardest thing to do – is take that performance you're seeing and
understand. Is it
realistic
to the NFL? Does that make sense?
It looks better than it would
if
who's he the defense against? Wasn't Big 12.
Right. Who's he playing against? Yeah. Right. Who does he have on his own team? Right. I think to that point there, what we're talking about, yeah, you were playing that team he was on, right? It was like, oh, Joe Burrow, Justin Jefferson, Ja'Marr Chase. The field was wide open. They had a good tight end, right? And he got to play in an environment that was very conducive to his skill set, let alone it was college football like we talked about. And even the best college teams have a few guys on their defense that aren't going to play in the NFL. So, you know, that you're exactly right, Mike. And that's the balancing act, and that's the hard thing about evaluating players and trying to figure out all of that and making sure the formula makes sense to where it works in the NFL. And that's why, you know, some guys are so valuable at the top of the draft, because they're like, whoa, this is can't miss. We know it. We see it. It's three rockets up his ass. It's strong as hell. There's no doubt about it. This guy's going to the NFL and he's running by him. We know that. This guy's going to the NFL and he's pancaking him every time. And, you know, that's what it's an easier evaluation, certainly. But yeah, this is one that, you know, I think we were all wrong about.
And we are only 22 days away from the draft, 2024. Still a lot of uncertainty as to how it's all going to play out, which makes it fun. Let's take a break. Speaking of uncertainty, Matt LaFleur had a significant amount of it when he learned that there was going to be a switcheroo at the tailback position in Green Bay. We alluded to it yesterday. We're going to take a closer look today at Matt LaFleur's claim that he didn't know that this was coming, that Josh Jacobs would be in and Aaron Jones would be out. We'll do that next here on PFT Live.
Most badass person you've ever coached in football?
It might be too soon, but like Aaron Jones is he's a badass football player.
Oh, wow.
So for a guy that's 190 pounds, yeah, and just the beating that the runners take in general, I mean, it's like a car crash every time they get tackled. So I think, honestly, just his ability to come back from, I thought he shredded his knee earlier this year when we were playing the Chargers, and his ability to, I still don't know how he didn't get severely injured on that play, but his ability to come back later in the year and what he was able to do, I would say that was pretty badass.
Matt LaFleur with Kevin Clark last week at the league meetings. And, Chris, it's something you say all the time, the running back. And it's one of the reasons why we're advocates for the running backs to get paid more. They are the baddest of the badasses on the team. They're the guy that's almost as fast as the fastest guy and almost as tough and scrappy as the toughest and scrappy guy. They can do it all, and they do it all. And maybe they could beat everyone in a race and kick everyone's ass at the same time.
Yeah, exactly right. And, you know, Aaron Jones, what he's doing. I mean, again, I think if most people saw Aaron Jones in person, you'd be like, what? This is the guy that's running between the tackles and bouncing off the Micah Parsons and Fred Warners of the world? Right? It's not going to be like, oh, wow, look at this specimen. I mean, that's the amazing thing. It's incredible speed. It's incredible strength for 190 pounds and an incredible durability to add on top of that. Like, hell of a football player. And, yeah, I mean, his best days might be behind him. But, damn, in that offense there in Minnesota, whoever's playing quarterback, we know that O'Connell can draw it up as far as throwing the ball down the field. And then you got Aaron Jones underneath in the pass game, the screen game, and, of course, the runs. You know, that's the type of formula we talk about all the time when you great offenses make you defend every part of the field. And that's where Minnesota will be a pain in the butt for some defenses this year.
LaFleur also addressed this notion that he really didn't know it was coming, that the Packers were going to embrace Josh Jacobs after 5 years in the NFL and a lot more wear and tear over the past 5 years than Aaron Jones and cut Jones loose. Here's LaFleur explaining his surprise when he found out that the front office was making that change.
It kind of caught me off guard, too, to be honest with you. I mean, certainly I knew that there was... There was some other things in play, obviously, with Aaron Jones. And I didn't quite know how everything was going to go. And it just happened really fast on that Monday. They came down and when they were allowed to start to talk to those guys. And, it happened really fast. So... I don't know all the details of that. I'm not involved in those types of conversations.
That clearly wasn't with Kevin Clark, unless there were a lot of rude people who showed up and decided to start talking and filling in the shot.
We'll give him the pub anyway.
That was the breakfast availability. But it's surprising, but it's kind of not. I mean, look. He said enough there where he knew there was an issue.
Yeah.
They were due to pay Aaron Jones too much money. I said this yesterday. When Jones said after the Packers 2023 season ended, the future is bright, my first thought was you're not going to be part of it. And, of course, I dared to make that observation, and everybody told me what an idiot I am. And, you know, they never tell you that they were wrong when they said you were an idiot. They just remind you when they were right that you were an idiot. But when they tell you you're an idiot and the thing you said pans out, they never come back and say, we were the idiots.
That's very rare.
But it was that massive salary that had to be dealt with.
Right.
And I assume, unless they misplayed this badly, I assume whatever the Packers were willing to pay Aaron Jones is less than the 1 year, $7 million deal he got from the Vikings.
I would think so, definitely, right? And again, maybe there's a little bit of a personal aspect, too, of like, wait, I'm your guy. You drafted me. I've been here. Why are you always looking to me to, you know, trim the fat off the salary cap or whatever else, right? I think it does get a little personal, more personal when it's the team you've been there your whole career and you feel like, wait, they're asking me to take a pay cut? Almost like the 49ers with Eric Armstead, similar type of situation, right? It's like, wait, I've been here, I've played all this good, and damn, it's 1 year where it's not perfect, and now you want a pay cut? And, you know, guys do get annoyed, or it gets personal when it gets into those type of situations. But, yeah, the Packers structure, as we see, it's interesting. It's not exactly like, you know, a lot of other teams in football, you know, and I think so even more maybe than the normal team where, yeah, the GM and the front office call the shots as far as player personnel and all that, and this guy coaches the team. It you know, again, like LaFleur said, he's aware, he knows, but they don't involve him in the details there. So he knew there was something going on there. But I think that was a little bit, hey, to LaFleur, what happened with the Aaron Rodgers and Jordan Love thing. I think that was one that was kind of similar. Like, wait, what? We're taking who? Okay, whoa, okay. We're going to open up a can of worms in my life here. and he deals with it. But interesting nonetheless. And, you know, Josh Jacobs, of course, different type of runner, right? A little bit younger, not much younger, but definitely a bigger, thicker, in between the tackles sledgehammer that's a little different than Aaron Jones' style.
We made this point yesterday, though. What made the transition from Jones to Jacobs even more surprising, the idea that they didn't go younger. They didn't draft a guy and then move on from a veteran. They got guy with a lot of wear and tear and a lot of mileage to replace guy with a lot of wear and tear and a lot of mileage who is expensive. 12 years, or not 12 years, that would be a long contract. 4 years, $48 million, $12 million a year. That's what I meant to say. But the way it's structured, they can get out of it after one year. They'll pay him a lot for 1 year, but they can easily get out of it after 1 year. They don't guarantee money beyond the first year. They're one of the few teams that does that. And, you know, you look at this idea that the coach isn't always in the loop. And I want to say that's dysfunctional.
Yeah.
But maybe it's not. You know, and this is a product, I think, of not having one owner that the coach can work on over time, an owner that will be smitten by the coach who, he won 13 games every year for his first 4 years. You know, there are coaches who will come in and leverage success into power. That's what Belichick did. Belichick didn't have all that power when he showed up in New England. He, if you've watched the Dynasty series and remember those days, he got more power the more successful he was. There are coaches that will try to grab control and authority, and they become the guy who's in charge of everything because they've won. That's one of the ways it happens. In Green Bay, there isn't that one person you can go to where it's going to make a difference. You can go to Mark Murphy all he wants. Mark Murphy can't change the structure of the way they've done things forever. They've got the CEO, they've got the board of directors, the coach is the coach, the GM's the GM, the front office does what it does, and the coach, to a certain extent, is a bystander in all that. The coach just has to see what they give him. Now, it would be dysfunctional if the coach's attitude was, well, you gave me that guy, and I'm not going to use him. I'm never putting Jordan Love on the football field. I'm never taking Aaron Rodgers off the field, or whatever the case may be. And Matt LaFleur's not like that, and that's probably one of the reasons why they hired him. They don't want to hire somebody who's going to come in and try to upset the system. But this is a product of the way the Packers always do things.
Yeah.
And I think it seems weird to us because elsewhere, a coach who's been that successful wouldn't be in the loop.
Guard.
He is the loop.
Right.
He is the loop.
Right. Right. They want, to your point, I think in a lot of organizations that are set up like, let's just say the GM, the front office, the head coaches the team and all of that, right? A lot of the times the front office wants the coach, means the coach. They want him to sign off on the player. Hey, we're thinking about letting go of this player. We're thinking about signing this guy or this guy. We might do this tomorrow. Coach puts on film, blah, blah, blah. Ooh, yeah, okay. Hey, I like that guy more than this guy, and we can make it work with the money or whatever else. That's what seems different about Green Bay, is sometimes that doesn't even happen. It's a little bit just like, hey, you know, we might do something with Aaron Jones. Hey, we did something with Aaron Jones, LaFleur, and we signed Josh Jacobs too, just so you know. And it's like, whoa, that's what it kind of seems like in Green Bay. And then to your point, I think in a lot of, you know, especially the organizations where the owner is in the building, right? And it's maybe, okay, the GM's in control of the team, the coach coaches the team, but the owner's in there. The owner can be a little bit of that liaison, right? The coach can get in his ear a little bit, like, hey, they want to get this player in free agency, and I don't love that. Like, he's got this issue, and I talked to this coach on the other staff, and they said he's a jerk and whatever else. And now, like you said, the owner can go up there, like you always say, and kind of make his thoughts be known or blah, 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 or try to bring them together in a conversation. And that's what's different about Green Bay. It's just done a little differently than a lot of teams.
And I hear you say that, and it's like, why the hell was Aaron Rodgers surprised that he didn't have a seat at the table? The head coach barely did. The head coach is just like, there's your team this year. Good luck. Well, why would the quarterback think he has more juice, more say, more influence than the head coach? But that's just the way they do things in Green Bay. And does it work for them? They're competitive more often than not. They've had a string of three great quarterbacks. Have they won enough championships to justify the presence of those quarterbacks? Probably not. But still, They are competitive and relevant every single year. We're going to take a break. When we return, Stephon Diggs. Sometimes his tweets are very cryptic and vague. Sometimes they're a little more direct, and they make a point. We'll break down something he had to say on X when PFT Live continues right after this.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed, also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
For the world's greatest athletes.
This is the showdown we've been waiting for.
There is nothing like competing on the world's biggest stage.
It's a world record again! Goal for the United States! Unbelievable!
And when that stage is Paris, anything can happen.
I have never seen anything like this.
How about that?
An Olympics unlike any other.
What a performance!
The Paris Olympics. This summer on NBC and streaming on Peacock.
Stephon Diggs takes to Twitter to reply to a post from RG3. Is Stephon Diggs essential to Josh Allen's success? Was the question posed by Robert Griffin. He has been since he got to Buffalo in 2020. They are better together. And if Stephon Diggs and Josh Allen stay together with Buffalo Bills this year, the championship window is wide open. Said the Peaky Pirate, does Josh benefit from having a top-tier receiver? Yes. Is he essential to his success? No. And then here comes Stephon Diggs. You never know when he's going to post. You never know what he's going to say. He says, you sure? Question mark. So, again, a guy who's been very direct at times, tweeted his way out of Minnesota 4 years ago. That's that question. And what's lurking over all this? Now, they allowed his salary to become guaranteed for this year. I still don't rule out a post-June 1 trade. That's the only way other than cutting him. Obviously, if they'd cut him with a post-June 1 designation, they would have taken the salary cap hit and split it over 2 years. The only other way to avoid that is to trade him after June 1. And remember, who was it that was traded after June 1? Was it Julio Jones traded after June 1?
Yeah,
I think it was.
Right.
He was traded by the Falcons
to the Titans
to manage the cap hit to split it over 2 years. So don't rule that out. Don't rule that out, the possibility of the Bills still moving on. There's still something there. The fact that Stephon Diggs felt compelled to chime in with that observation in response to the Peaky Pirate, it's on his mind. Otherwise, he wouldn't have given in to the temptation to make that point that he made.
I wish, and again, I say this because I'm a fan of Stephon Diggs, the guy, the person. I mean, we both are. We talk about that, right? I wish he wouldn't do this stuff. I don't think it's the best for Stephon Diggs. I don't think it does him any good. You know, even for those teams that are out there looking to go, maybe we would trade for Stephon Diggs. They look at it and they go, why does he have to do this? That's not going to put him in a good light. That's what I would say first thing on a personal level to Stephon Diggs. Don't get involved in this crap, right? Don't get involved in answering people that really don't know their ass from a bag of sand. Sorry, London, as far as what football is concerned, right? That to me would be, you know, the biggest thing I would say there, right? And the other thing, too.
Chris,
right.
If what this random person is saying echoes things he's been hearing from people who do know their ass from a bag of sand, sorry, London, then maybe that's why he responded. I doubt that he just gave into the temptation of some fringe view of some guy, the Peaky Pirate, who said what he said. Well, this has been a common thought out there. Does Josh Allen really need Stephon Diggs?
Right. Yeah, he does need Stephon Diggs. Is it like a necessity? I mean, Josh Allen, again, you talk to anybody. You talk to Jim Kelly. You talk to Troy Aikman. You talk to Phil Sims. You talk to Tom Brady. You talk to Patrick Mahomes. They're going to tell you Josh Allen is one of the greatest talents you've ever seen in your life, period, at quarterback, period. He is a, like, true, like, Greek god of quarterback talent. And he's damn good at playing it on the field, too, right? Now, yeah, they're better together, as we know. The biggest problem is the rest of it. That's the biggest problem. Is Diggs, Jamar Chase, or Justin Jefferson, or Tyreek Hill? No, right? And, again, can Josh Allen still throw for 300 yards in a game without Diggs, you know, having a huge day? Yes, of course. We saw that at the end of the year. The big thing that's going to make both of their lives better and even more special and quiet some of this stuff down, it's the other guys that we talk about all the time. Again, now what people need to realize, RG3, everybody else out in the world that's talking about this and go, no, it's not Diggs, it's not Josh Allen. It's the fact that everyone portrayed Gabe Davis as like a, ooh, he might be a number one receiver too. And as we found out, the league thinks he's a number three, right? Period. Three. $13 million a year contract. That's a number three receiver in the NFL. So that's the big thing. As we talked about every year after they lose in the playoffs, there's nobody on the team other than Diggs and Allen that can kind of go above and beyond what the playbook delivers, right? And that's where they need something else. I like Curtis Samuel. That's a good signing by them. I think he could add that element. Mac Hollins is a guy that can go deep down the field, right? But they probably still need another guy in, as far as that conversation is concerned. And that's the biggest issue there in Buffalo.
Khalil Shakur broke out last year and maybe even eclipsed Gabe Davis as the season went on.
Definitely.
Diggs himself has said that Davis is a number one receiver. Maybe he's just being a good teammate.
Of course.
Maybe he's being a little passive aggressive. I don't know. The reality, though, is as last season went on, Diggs was less involved. Once Ken Dorsey was out and Joe Brady took over, it felt like there was a shift away from Diggs. And when you look at the production, and again, it's not just what have you done for me lately, it's what are you doing for me now, what can I expect you to do for me tomorrow? How do the Bills project to utilize Stephon Diggs in 2024? What are the scars, if any, lingering from that weird thing that happened last year with mandatory minicamp when Sean McDermott acted like he didn't show up or he left, he just walked out, and then it comes out that he was told to leave? Slight difference. Walking out the door on your own volition and being told to go are two very different things. That was weird and that was awkward and that settled down, but it doesn't go away. When something weird like that happens, does it just become forgotten? Maybe it's forgiven. It's not forgotten. There's just a strange vibe there. And the fact that Diggs gave in to the temptation to respond to the Peaky Pirate tells me that there's still something.
Yeah, I agree with you there.
And they might
agree.
They might think he doesn't justify what he's due to make this year for our offense.
That's crazy.
But
right,
we believe we can get value for him. We'll carry that salary. We'll take on that guarantee in the event we can't find a trade partner. But we're confident when the time comes, we'll find somebody and we'll be able to move on. And again, it's a combination, Chris, I think, of on field and this other stuff that flashes from time to time that came to a head last year with that very bizarre 2-day period in June that we were all like, what the hell's going on with Stephon Diggs and the Bills?
Yeah, I mean, yes, there's been some weirdness. I'm certainly not going to deny that. We know that, right? You know, I mean, again, it's not that crazy, right? We saw Tyreek Hill not be that happy when he was on the best team in football with the best quarterback in football and Patrick Mahomes and want more, right? So that's the way the receivers are a little bit, right? No doubt about it. You know, but yeah, it's I still think
Diggs has already been that guy. He wasn't happy in Minnesota with Kirk Cousins.
The day
Kirk Cousins signed an extension, he tweeted his way out of Minnesota.
That's
so
why
the rubber band's already been stretched.
That's why I'm just saying, like, yeah, I think he's at a point of his career where I wish he wouldn't do this, right? Because it's not again so talented like a Tyreek Hill at this point where people are like, oh, we'll just deal with some of the headaches and what it's gonna do because oh my gosh, every time he touches the ball, it might be a touchdown, right? And that's where Diggs, I don't think, does himself any favors that way. And I wish he wouldn't listen to that noise, certainly, because, I, you know, again, I think a lot of him is a player. The Bills certainly need him. They need that kind of guy. They don't got anything like that on the offense. So, I hope they don't trade him. I don't want to see that. And I still think, you know, he's best there in Buffalo with Josh Allen.
Maybe they'll have a guy like that by the time we get through round one of the draft.
Yeah, maybe.
I don't know. There's guys out there, and maybe one of them trickles down, and then we see, okay, well, they're planning for the future, and the future might be now. Where do you think Diggs would go? If he could pick any team in the NFL right now, any team, where do you think he would go? Give me his top two or three destinations that you believe he'd want to go to if he could leave right now and sign with another team with no cap consequences, contract issues, whatever.
Dallas and Kansas City come, like, right to mind, right? I mean, that would be the two spots, I think, right off the bat. I mean, again, we know he's flirted with the Cowboys and, you know, his brother's there and all of that. Those are two that I just think that would be on his radar in a big way. You know, whether they can manage that, the cap and all that, yeah, I don't know if that's possible, actually.
Yeah, I think Kansas City would be the one. You know how you say you're a hotel snob? I kind of think Diggs is a quarterback snob.
Yeah, sure.
And
I get that.
He wants, and you know, all great receivers want to be with the best possible quarterbacks, and who's better right now than Patrick Mahomes? And really, after he's already with Josh Allen, so like Cincinnati, would he want to go there if they move on from T. Higgins? They haven't shown an inclination to trade him, and they haven't gotten a whole lot of interest, as last I heard, in trading for T. Higgins. So I think it would be Kansas City and maybe Dallas from the standpoint of playing with his brother. But the quarterback position there is unsettled after this year with Dak Prescott's contract. Do they want him back? Does he want to come back? How's that going to work out? Until they sign an extension, we don't know who the quarterback for the Cowboys will be in 2025. So we know Mahomes is going to be around Kansas City. I think that makes the most sense. Kansas City, that's where I'd want to go if I was Stephon Diggs, because I wouldn't have to stand out there on the field after the AFC Championship and watch the Chiefs celebrate. I would be part of the celebration with them. And that's clearly an area of need on the team. All right, let's go ahead and take a break. When we return, 22 days away from the draft, we're going to go division by division with draft needs. Each team, we're going to do half of the AFC North next. And then after that, we'll do the other half. More PFT Live right after this.
He's looking at guys now. Yeah, yeah, he and I agree on a few guys. Yeah, we haven't disagreed on anybody yet, so sharing our vision. Well, he's more interested in the wide receivers and tight ends. Yeah, he hasn't weighed in on any offensive linemen just yet.
John Harbaugh, Ravens coach, talking about his conversations with Lamar Jackson about the prospects that they are exploring for the 2024 draft. And, hey, franchise quarterbacks getting involved last year. Patrick Mahomes throwing with guys. Hey, the more that the quarterback is willing to be involved, now at some point the quarterback may expect say, but I think there's a human element to this that makes a ton of sense. You empower and involve your quarterback. This is the guy that's going to have to throw the pass. The coach is the guy that's going to have to coach him. The quarterback's guy's going to have to play with them. I think it makes sense to be open and to have involvement from your key players on your team.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely with something like that. You know, you're talking about receiver, quarterback, that combination, right? You know, you want your quarterback to like that receiver. You know, if there's a chemistry, right? Like we heard Mahomes saw Rasheed Rice, got to work out with him before the draft last year. Not only did he go, ooh, wait, I like this guy as a player, but he fits us. He's like us. This will work, right? So there's things to be, you know, gleaned by that type of stuff. And certainly with as much money being invested in the quarterbacks nowadays with these organizations, why wouldn't you want to make your highest paid employee like the other employees that he's got to work with, and his success is detrimental to with who's around him?
Of course, a year later, the Chiefs may be regretting the Rasheed Rice pick for reasons unrelated to his on-field skills. That continues to be a developing story. The Ravens can't leave the 2024 draft without addressing what position, in your opinion. They got the 30th overall pick and 9 total selections.
I think the most basic thought, right, you know, you can look at corner and go, okay, maybe they could add something there, right? But I think the most basic thing that you look at for the Ravens to go, they got to have this, is some sort of O lineman in the draft. You know, I would think you would definitely see an O lineman drafted. I would think in the one of the first two picks, right? Maybe, you know, maybe both, maybe two out of the first three. But hey, lost John Simpson in free agency, right? You know, no more Zeitler. He's gone. Traded Morgan Moses to the Jets. Ronnie Stanley been really good, but in, you know, is awesome, but injured and going into a contract year. I would think that's the position they're looking at. And for a year to need that position, this is the year to need it, Mike, because we're in a year where, no joke, Mike, I think you could have 10 offensive linemen picked in the first round.
And you've got 9 total picks for the Ravens. And look, I'm going to go beyond the obvious needs. I look at the depth chart. And Tyler Huntley's gone. Josh Johnson is the backup to Lamar Jackson. All due respect to Josh Johnson, who I think has been on every team in the NFL, the CFL, the UFL, and the Arena League. At some point, you got to develop somebody who can be your understudy to Lamar Jackson, because even though he was healthy all of last year, we've seen the history. He plays with a physicality that can cause injuries. 27 now. I want to use one of those 9 picks on a developmental quarterback that is my safety net, my insurance policy for Lamar Jackson, because I'm not comfortable with that being Josh Johnson.
Yeah, no, I hear you there. That's definitely a little risky, right? Did they see something in Malik Cunningham, right, that maybe he could be that guy, that backup? We'll see. But, yeah, you know, we talk about it all the time. It's a Super Bowl team. Are we really going to roll the dice on, ooh, we don't think our guy will get hurt, and, oh, wait, we might fall apart with our backup? I would think they're looking at something in the draft too, Mike.
Malik Cunningham, the undrafted guy who was the quarterback at Louisville, who was a receiver in New England and was playing quarterback there. And
right,
we were getting this sense that, hey, they may have something here. And then out he went, and they played that roster game, and the Ravens ultimately grabbed him, and they have him as number 3 behind Josh Johnson and ultimately behind Lamar Jackson. It's funny, you look at the defensive departures for the Ravens, but the one thing, now it might be different with Mike McDonald, but something they've always done under John Harbaugh, like whoever the guys are, by the end of the season, they're kicking the crap out of you.
No
they're
doubt.
They're just a group of badass.
Yes.
And they get the most. They're doing something right, because the guys that you never heard of before step in, and by the end of the year, you know who they are, because
yes,
they're getting it done every week.
That's right. And that's the hardest thing about O-line, right? You know, O-line is just like, how do they feel about a guy they might have drafted in the 3rd or 4th round 2-3 years ago? Oh, they might think he's kind of ready and coming up the ranks. Maybe they're not as desperate at the O-line as we think. And, you know, I understand that, you know, too. I don't think they're desperate. I say O-line because I go, man, they got to think about the future and depth and, you know, kind of building that way. You know, but at the same time, I mean, we saw Patrick McCurry play right tackle last year, do pretty good. Maybe they move him into guard, and maybe this is the year they feel really comfortable with, you know, Falele. I'm gonna butcher his name. The big tackle who's like almost 380 pounds, right? Maybe they feel like he's ready to make that transition and be that guy at right tackle. But I still think at some point that O-line's got to be addressed in the first 2 or 3 rounds.
That's the one thing we don't know and never will know about these teams, how they truly feel about the guys who are in the pipeline who haven't played yet. They know them better, and they make the projection as to who's going to step in and become that guy that we all know in the next season. Bengals cannot leave the 2024 draft without addressing what via the 18th overall selection and 10 total picks as of right now.
Yeah, there's a few things here at play too. I mean, you know, one, lost DJ Reader, right, in free agency. So you want to go and go, wait, do they need a D tackle? Now, I don't know if it's a desperate need, but I think it's something they can look at. They got BJ Hill there. They got a guy in Zach Carter who's a damn good football player, right? And they signed Sheldon Rankins, if I'm remembering correctly, which, I am.
Correct.
Right? So they're not desperate there, but I think, you know, as far as future is concerned, how long will BJ Hill be there? Sheldon Rankins is a smaller guy who's got a little injury history and good, right? I would think D-tackle is definitely on the radar, let alone probably a receiver for the future. I think that could probably be another thing I'd probably look at if I were the Cincinnati Bengals. I mean, as it looks, right? T. Higgins, 1 year. Jamar Chase, right? We got to sign him. Okay. Tyler Boyd, that's all done. So, yeah, they certainly, I think those are the two positions that kind of pop to me, Mike, more than others.
The thing that's glaring to me, I mean, you know, they add Trent Brown.
Yeah, the tackle thing, where you think, you know, I mean, yeah, that's another
yeah,
one.
Yeah, he's been good at times with the Patriots, but anytime he's anywhere but New England, it just doesn't work out.
Yeah, right.
So I want my offensive line to be as good as it can be each and every year that Joe Burrow is my quarterback, because he's fearless, and if something busts open on the offensive line, he's going to stand in the pocket, he's going to deliver the ball, and if he gets hit, he's going to get hit. And if he gets hurt, he's going to get hurt, and that's it. And he's coming off that wrist injury. He's had the serious knee injury his rookie year when somebody hit him in the plant leg. And I don't think that bringing in Trent Brown gives me the confidence.
I think you're
that
right.
Everything's fine.
Yeah, I think you're right with that thought. You know, Jonah Williams left in free agency, right? Went to the Arizona Cardinals. Trent Brown is definitely risky there, right? That might be the play. I think we hit the three positions there, D-tackle, wide receiver, and, you know, an offensive tackle, whether it's for right now or for 2 years from now, right? Because I think the rest of the offensive line is in a pretty good spot when you look at it. You know, they made the appropriate moves last year. We know that. They got Orlando Brown Jr. They addressed the center position, right? They got the kid Volston, I think I got that right. Yeah, Volston at guard, who's a young football player. They got, you know, the guy they signed from the Bucks, Kappa, there, as far as another guy. So, yeah, I could certainly see right tackle in the first two rounds, something there to address maybe now and the future, you know, for life after Trent Brown. Mike, I don't think your thought's wrong there at all.
And we know how it goes. You can have four great offensive linemen, but if one isn't getting it done, that's where the defense exploits that opening and busts through and creates problems for the rest of the offense. All right, we're going to take a break. We will continue our preview of the AFC North draft needs with the Steelers and the Browns when PFT Live continues right after this. How about this little number? You know, if you're going to go to a baseball game, you may as well eat, because there's otherwise nothing to do because it's boring. The Renegade.
What a jerk you are. It's
the
not
Renegade.
Boring. You're a jerk.
I think, look at this thing. It is...
What the hell is on
there? A foot-long hot dog.
Right.
Topped with pierogies. Have you ever had a pierogi? You know what a pierogi is?
Yeah,
see the pierogies on there?
Yeah, I don't.
It's a little... It's a dumpling. It's a potato. It's got mashed potatoes inside of it. It's awesome.
Yeah, right.
It's a Polish thing, I think.
Right.
Awesome.
Right.
Pot roast, pickles and onions. Who thinks they could eat the entire thing? Let me tell you, they call it the Renegade because you eat that thing, you should be in fear for your life.
Well,
yes.
Yeah. Well,
oh, mama.
Or
I am definitely in fear of my life if I eat all that.
Anybody that has to share a bathroom with you is going to be in fear for your life as well.
That's the...
Yeah, but yeah. I mean, yeah, that
Renegade
one's not
is also
for
what
me.
We call the toilet.
That is not what I need right there. That's not going to happen ever. I don't want a dumpling on top of my hot dog. Sorry. Nor do I want cucumbers on there either. So that's not going to work.
I think you probably eat the pierogies and then eat the hot dog. I can't imagine picking that whole thing up and trying to eat it. I don't know how you would eat that thing. It's got pot roast on top of the hot dog. Do you eat it with a knife and fork like Mr. Pitt? I don't know. Also, the pickles are the deal breaker for me. See, all it takes is one ingredient for me for something to be a deal breaker. Like, you know, there'll be something on a menu and I'll say, is that on it? If you can't, I mean, it's like, I don't like to be, can you take that off? If it's part of the, you know, the dish, all it takes is one thing. And it ruins it. I'm done. I'm out. The pickles for me, out. I don't want pickles.
I don't want pickles either. That's not for me there. I'm with you all the way.
Why do people like pickles? I'm not saying you shouldn't. I'm just trying to understand why.
Right. Kristen's in my ear right now going,
Kristen,
they're delicious.
Because they're delicious.
They're delicious, right.
Kristen, you can have all my pickles.
Yeah, they're,
at any
they're,
event
they're
that
not
we
for me.
Be,
but
I
know
pickles,
some people love them on a, you know, especially the burger and all that. And every now and then, like, I accidentally bite into a burger that's got the pickles
I was just
on it.
I say that.
And
yeah.
it's not the worst. I'm not like, right? But I still am going to like, oh, let me take the top of the bun off and take the rest of the pickles off. I don't want to eat that.
I had something recently where I had an accidental pickle, and it wasn't horrible, but it's still not so good that it's like, oh, give me more of the pickle part.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Right.
All right. AFC North draft needs, where, you know, one ingredient can maybe make a difference or not for the Pittsburgh Steelers. They've added quarterbacks. They've blown up, sir, the entire quarterback room. They can't leave the draft without what? Seven picks, 20th overall. What do they need to do?
I still think O-line is the place to look at, right, for the Pittsburgh Steelers. And honestly, I think D-line is still a place they're going to look at, too. I think you could see both there. I mean, Cam Hayward, it's year, what, 14 we're going into here, right? I know they got DeMarvin Leal, who's a good little player. Certainly Keanu Benton, who they got in the second round last year. But I wouldn't be shocked to see the Steelers go, hey, I'm Mike Tomlin, and we're going to get back to, you know, Steelers, Blitzburg, dominant defense. We're going to get one of these top-notch defensive tackles and put him in part of the front seven with these other guys we got. I wouldn't be shocked there. The O-line is, of course, the other one. I think it's either one of those that I kind of look at more than anything, especially, you know, as we're sitting here talking. We're not talking about round five picks. We're talking about something that's tangible in the first few rounds of the draft. I would think the first two rounds that, you know, those are they're certainly being considered as far as interior O-line and D-line for sure.
They have proven over the years that they can find receivers in pretty much any round of the draft and turn them into great players. Their depth chart at receiver.
Yeah,
right,
I know.
Now
it needs
glaring.
It. Right, right.
George Pickens, Van Jefferson, Quez Watkins are the top three. Dez Fitzpatrick, Denzel Mims, Calvin Austin III. They need something. Deontay Johnson, as I mentioned, is gone. They've proven they can go out and find these guys and develop these guys. They need to do it this year to get the most out of these new quarterbacks in Russell Wilson and Justin Fields. I mean, the guys that both players were throwing to last year. Better than the guys they'll be throwing to in Pittsburgh pre-draft. Post-draft, maybe we'll feel differently.
Yeah, we always talk about it. Pittsburgh's amazing, right, at finding that mid-round, third-round wide receiver and us going, wow. So I would expect that to be part of the game plan as well. I don't know if I'm feeling like first-round pick at receiver. That doesn't feel like a Steelers type of move right now at this juncture, right? But I would think certainly one of those round three picks, maybe even that round two, pick 51, I wouldn't be shocked to see them get the receiver and bolster that room like you're talking about. They got a lot of good, you know, they got some guys, and then, you know, Van Jefferson, hey, we'll be able to depend on him. He can do a little bit of everything. And then they took some shots on some guys that I'm sure they looked at and went, wait, we think we can get him here and turn him into something, right, with a Denzel Mims or a Marquez Callaway, something like that. So it'll be interesting to see what their approach is.
Cleveland Browns, who don't have a first-round pick due to the final installment of the Deshaun Watson trade, they can't leave the 2024 draft without addressing what, Chris?
I think the big thing I look at more than anything is defensive tackle. I think that, you know, they got Dalvin Tomlinson in there. We know big run stuffer, right? But a guy also that's, you know, getting up there in years a little bit. Right? So that's one where I go, okay, you know, this is a team that we've looked at and gone, damn, they're talented. We know that, right? I mean, there's not a lot of holes here. It's O-lineman for the future, maybe, right? You know, receiver, they're good. Corners, they're extraordinary. Safety, there's good. I really think it's the interior part of the defense. The edge is good. I think it's D-tackle. You know, I know they signed some linebackers in free agency, right? They got Jordan Hicks. They got Devin Bush. But I would think they're looking for something for the future there, too. I would think interior part of the defense is the main thing, Mike, that I'd be looking at.
Yeah, not many other changes on that defense in the offseason, which is good because their defense was great. You know, I look at, you know, Nick Chubb's coming off the major knee injury. Jerome Ford, Nyheim Hines, he's coming off a major knee injury. Deontay Foreman, he's had flashes. I'd maybe want.
Yeah, they're going to address it.
Mid-round,
right.
Running back.
Right.
They only got five picks, but I want a guy that can kind of become my Nick Chubb 2-3 years from now.
I don't disagree with you there. I mean, I would think that could be something they look at, you know. Now, was it that round two or round three pick? I don't know. You know, that might be one that happens round five. But I think we're on the right track with where we're at in this conversation and them. You know, again, you look at hey, is tight end, right, for the future. That's another one you look at. They're a little thin there, but, you know, all in all, Cleveland's a pretty well-built team. It's kind of more just depth, future-looking. I look at that defensive tackle linebacker position to be the most like, ooh, there's not difference makers like there is in other positions on that roster. That's one that can be addressed, certainly, and we'll see what they do.
All right, we're going to take a break, and this Wednesday edition of PFT Live concludes right after this. Monday night, the Iowa-LSU Elite Eight game for the women's basketball tournament generated 12.3 million viewers, the most watched women's basketball game ever. And, I mean, better ratings than a lot of pro sports. I saw a suggestion somewhere it did better than Thursday Night Football. I don't know what the average for the full season was for Thursday Night Football. Maybe it did. You're talking eight figures in this day and age to get people around a TV at the same time. The NFL is the only thing that does that. Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese and Iowa and LSU did that. It'll be interesting to see what Iowa does in the future games, because that was the one. That was the rematch of last year's championship. Will they do as well, Final Four, and if they win championship game, that remains to be seen. But 12.3 is pretty damn awesome.
Yeah, no, it's amazing. And, you know, I would think that they can continue this, right? If it's the right matchup that happens, you know, they end up, I can't remember who they're playing in the first round, but, I mean, with South Carolina being undefeated, right, that versus Caitlin Clark in the national championship game, right, if they played UConn, that'd be another
It's UConn in the first round.
Okay, it's UConn in the first. Well, that's going to get an incredible rating. It's UConn. That's like a blue blood of the college basketball, you know, sport, let alone, and we know it is for women. So I could see it rivaling that, Mike. I mean, the crossover is phenomenal. Again, I'll be one. I watch all sports. I love all sports. I can't say in my past that I've gone, ooh, let me turn on the woman's Final Eight, right, the Great Eight, and let me watch like I did the other night. I had a certain draw because I've seen something special from that player, Caitlin Clark.
Well, it's what you were talking about with the UFL. They need special.
Need stars.
Women's
special.
Basketball has special
exactly.
Now in Caitlin Clark, and that's right. What gets people to tune in.
Yep.
All right. Thanks for tuning in.
See ya.
See you tomorrow.
You're not special. See ya.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.